The Black Shore Arts Hour.
Hello, it's another episode of the Black Shore Arts Hour. I am Ellie and I am joined, as per, by the lovely Mr. Matt Boothman.
Hello.
Hello. So, today we have got some fantastic things coming up. We have got a review, but of course, we've also got a little bit of Stratton Alex doing art. Not only are we going to be doing a new one, but also reflecting on who has won via the public vote from last time. We're going to be hearing a trailer for The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell, which is Blackshaw's upcoming show, and we're going to be having a little sneak peek discussion into the new series of Merely Role Players. So, without further ado, we'll do this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Boothman, what are you reviewing for us today?
Let's do Avengers Infinity War.
Oh yeah, let's do it. Ugh.
And let's try and keep it as spoiler-free as we can.
And not cry.
So this is the mega crossover superhero comic book movie from Marvel, which has everybody in it. It is, I think it's fair to say, an undeniably weird piece of art.
So like weird.
Piece of cinema.
Yep.
It cannot exist outside of the context of all of the other films in the series, basically.
No, can you imagine going to see it if you haven't seen any of the other films? You'd be like, "This, what's happening?"
You'd be like, "This does not obey any of the rules of like cinematic storytelling or general storytelling at all."
No, or characters.
No,
because actually, what I thought was really fun is that all obviously the kind of standalone movies have their own almost genre that they create. Like a Thor movie is very different from a Captain America movie, for example. But then putting them all together, and of course, Guardians of the Galaxy. It just creates such a wonderful mashup.
Yeah, and like stylistically, I think Infinity War is closer to Guardians of the Galaxy than any of the other ones that have been before.
I would agree.
It is still a mashup.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if there's really ever been anything like it on the big screen ever.
I can't think of it.
There's been 10 years of groundwork for this.
Yeah, it's big.
Yeah. Definitely never been this much groundwork laid for what is, at the end of the day, a 150-minute CGI superhero slugfest.
Yes, yeah.
I've been thinking about it in terms, like, sort of academically as a storytelling kind of artifact.
Have you got a special hat for doing that?
I have a special little booth that I sit in.
A booth in the, Boothman in the booth.
little contemplation booth. Like I started thinking of it like it's a like a prism.
Uh-huh.
Like it's a single focal point for 10 years worth of stuff that is kind of streaming into it from one side.
Yeah.
And it's loads of kind of, to some extent, transformed stuff is going to stream out of the other side of it. But it's like, it's this pinch point at the centre of the hourglass for all of this material.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, but it's also, like, the reason I went with prism in the first place is it's this kind of container. It's just a container for all this stuff that has gone in and then come out. Like, it's sort of a payoff for 10 years of storytelling.
Mm.
But we know going in that it's not supposed to be an ending to that. It's not even really, in terms of sort of traditional story beats, it's not even the climax
It's a two-part film, which,
yeah.
Which, can I just say, we did in theory know in advance of going to see the film, but I forgot. So when we got to the end, no spoilers, I was just...
Can you end it there?
I was broken. And then I turned to look at Vicky and Dave, and Vicky was like, there's another one, right?
So what all this means is we get characters are sort of briefly introduced in terms of this is the current circumstances this person finds them in, finds themselves in, rather than...
Backstory.
The assumption is made that all the vital details of character are already established. You know that even if you haven't like watched all of the films, you know this person's general kind of personality, demeanour, superpowers,
you know their fang.
Yeah, you know their fang.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in it really has a character arc, even. Like, nobody...
There's no time.
Yeah. Well, no, there is time. Like, there's 150 minutes of screen time.
But there's no time that they live through, I think, for them to have a change. Like, I think the events that take place over a really short period of time.
It hit me kind of near the end. I think there's something that the villain says that made me realise, oh, all of this is supposed to have happened over the course of a day.
Yeah, there's no, like, 6 months later in this one.
Yeah, so...
There's no montages.
No.
I think in most of the other films you have a montage, right?
Yeah, it's almost real time. It's weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, nobody kind of grows and changes or learns anything, with the possible exception of Doctor Strange, Benedict Cumberbatch's character.
You totally just said Benedict Cumberbatch.
We're past the watershed now, I can do
that. Yes, fine.
He maybe has a character arc, but probably not, and we won't find out whether he had one until the next film.
Yeah, if you've seen it, I don't think it's a character arc.
No, me neither.
I don't think he learns anything. I think he has learned something, like a bit of knowledge.
Yes, a piece of knowledge.
Not a personal development. No.
I think an impressive thing about it is that with all of these characters to juggle, all of these plot threads and everything, it still manages to have quiet scenes.
Yes.
There are quite a lot, like a surprisingly high volume of tender two-handers or three-handers. Yeah, or there's a Thor and Rocket Raccoon scene that I found very affecting.
Yeah.
So it's not a kind of relentless 2 hours of people teaming up and racing to get the magical Googus MacGuffin.
That's right.
And teaming up fights.
There is
stuff that happens between those things that means that it feels like it has time to breathe. It's not just breakneck.
For a film that feels very cohesive, it's actually quite splintered in terms of scenes. There are so many different combinations of actors and scenes, which is funny because hearing some of them talk about it at press junkets and so on, they've said, especially what's his chops, who plays Tom Hollander, Spider-Man.
Tom Hollander is a different actor.
Yes, apologies. Tom Holland, I just didn't really see anyone on set. I was talking to like a tennis ball, but it was supposed to be Benedict Cumberbatch. I don't know. But they hardly gave him any of the scripts to read because he was so bad at keeping spoilers in for Spider-Man promo.
Now that it's out, people have started realising, like looking back at old interviews Tom Holland did and realising that he gave loads of stuff away.
Yeah. He's not allowed to see anything apart from like the lines he has to say now. He doesn't even know what people are going to say back to him.
Put him in the green screen booth.
Yeah, that's literally said. It's pretty much what he did for the whole of the film.
So, like you say, people get kind of paired off into interesting teams and combinations and things. But I thought it felt quite sort of natural the way that people have moved around it. Because the potential with a movie with so many moving parts and so many characters to keep track of is that it feels like the invisible hand of the director is moving people around like chess pieces, going, well, this person needs to be here for this to happen.
Yeah, quite like strategic and hitting marks.
Yeah,
I felt a bit like in the Harry Potter films.
Yeah, or like the latest season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's no breathing room, just all like bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, there's a lot of, how on earth did that person even get there in that time? Oh, I guess he just needed to be there for the plot.
Travel by map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Varys is a secret merman. Don't at me. So what actually happens in this one is the villain, Thanos, played by Josh Brolin in a CGI character. He has to get a load of magic gems that have been teased in various other movies and stick them all on his glove to give himself infinite cosmic power.
Yeah, like some kind of hoarding Polly Pocket.
Yeah. he's basically the main character, or he's at least the protagonist of the film, because he's the one that is making everything happen, and like everybody else is basically just having to react to him for the whole film.
Yeah. Diva.
Yeah, and he gets the most in terms of character development because he's been in the background as a threat for other films.
Yes, and sort of generic hulking great threat.
Yeah,
he's
turned up in the background and made monologues at people and pulled strings, but there's never really been anything about what he wants, why is he doing any of this stuff. So we get a bit of that from him for this film. I found him quite an interesting villain. He's not quite sort of Marvel have struggled with this. They've had some good ones, and he's not quite up there with the best.
I think what made him more interesting than most of them is that he doesn't just want to destroy everything. Mm-hmm. There's not just like, destroy everything, rule the world.
No.
He has a different aim.
Yeah, he's so his thing is he wants infinite cosmic power because it will allow him to kill half the people in the universe with a click of his fingers and something end starvation and want.
Yeah.
Which I found it really kind of interesting as a villain motivation because it's understandable, but it's so flawed and wrong-headed that you can't help but... Like you can't side with him. You can't.
No, because it's morally reprehensible.
Yeah, you understand where he's coming from, but his logic is so twisted that you can't sympathise.
Well, yeah, I'm like, if you have all power, why don't you just snap your fingers and make plenty of food and water for everyone, right?
Exactly. And he has this martyr complex throughout the whole film of... I'm the only one who can see that this is the solution to the universe's problems.
I'm so tortured.
I have to go. I've gone through so much to achieve this. And actually, he is taking the easiest possible, laziest possible solution. So it sounds on the surface, and I'm sure it sounds to him as a character, like a big epic quest. Get the 6 gems that were forged in the heart of the Big Bang and infinite cosmic power something.
Mm.
But actually, it's because he sees a problem, but he can't be asked to, like, actually find a solution to the problem.
Yeah.
His solution is, like, kill loads of people, and then maybe the problem goes away for some time,
well,
maybe.
I know, like, the Earth's going to just repopulate again, right? Yeah, isn't that how it works? And also, you're going to kill people who might be useful for helping solve the problem. It is not good logic.
Yeah. What is interesting in kind of the intersection of that as a motivation for the villain, as a plan for the villain, and this particular film and the things that make it unique, i.e. The fact that it is building on 10 years of continuity and there are all these established characters in it, is it goes some way towards, or at least makes an attempt at solving that thing we've talked about in terms of big superhero blockbusters before, which is the impersonal mass destruction problem.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of them seem to be getting better now, but there was a period in blockbuster action movies where the climax of every action movie was like a big fight between the good guy and the bad guy that like levels a city. And
yes.
Buildings fall down, but no, you don't really get any sense of like it's only kind of the commentariat afterwards that is pointing out like, oh, there were probably people in that building and they probably killed a million people. So when the motivation of a villain in a story is I'm going to kill a lot of people or like, you know, destroy the world, whatever, it can feel so big that it's you can't get your head around it and it actually feels like a smaller threat than it should.
Yes.
But because this universe is so heavily populated now,
mm-hmm.
when he says, I'm going to kill half of everyone,
uh-huh.
you know, like 100 people in this universe and being like, oh, half of those
get killed
if he wins. It actually feels like there's stakes.
Yes.
Even though the scale of what he's trying to do is so big as to be unimaginable.
Yes, it's a really clever hook, actually, because the human brain can't really comprehend tragedy on a scale of numbers. Mm. It's, you know, if it's someone you know.
Yeah.
Or if it's a character you have got become, you know, to come to know and love.
Yeah.
It hurts a lot more, guys.
Yeah, it's like half the universe, can't really wrap my head around it. Half your faves.
Yeah. Half the Chris's.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's a bit of a different prospect. So in among all of that, it manages to be funny as well.
Mm.
I was surprised by the volume of gags.
Oh my goodness.
The volume of gags that land as well. I thought quite a lot of them were actually good.
Yeah.
Like good quotable lines.
It was really good. And I mean, I saw it in quite a full cinema audience, which was really nice. But I think, well, Dave in particular, but me, Vicky, Dave and Alex saw it together, Blackshaw regulars. And I think we find stuff funny that other people don't. So we'd kind of honk at something and then people would turn around and we were like, oh, but it's funny, right? I mean, we laughed at the bits you're supposed to laugh at as well.
Yeah,
but
just other stuff
just
too.
Just offbeat.
there's some good, like Robert Downey Jr. has some good facial expressions.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, like the people you expect to have quips have good quips.
Oh, such quips.
Yeah. In as much as it's about anything, it is about that, the thing about the, what makes someone a villain is that they will do literally anything to achieve their goal, even if, like, so I want to gather the things and kill half the people. People keep getting in my way and trying to punch me to stop me to, from doing that. That must just mean that I'm right. Like, it only reinforces his the villain's worldview. And we are shown over and over again, almost to the point that it does feel a bit like we're being beaten over the head with it. The goody characters being presented with similar choices of,
yes,
do we sacrifice a person for the good of the rest of everyone?
And then Captain America's like, blah, 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 we don't do that.
Yeah, do you know, we can stop him from enacting his master plan if this one person dies. Yeah. Do we do it? And it has the, you know, the thesis of the movie is what makes us heroes is that we don't make that choice. Yeah. We find a third way. So, you know, it's trying to be about something. It's a bit...
Well, like, it's a bit trite. And also not doesn't really follow through on their logic. Because like you said, in a lot of films, they destroy a lot of city in which people, like innocent civilians die. And they don't at that point be like, should I blow up that building the bad guy's in? Or should I hold off because there might be innocent? I'll just blow it up. Just blow it up. But when they're like, oh, well, I don't sacrifice the life of my friends in order to, for the greater good. It's like, oh, but you'll sacrifice faceless civilians. That's fine then. That's totally fine. But I see what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all heroes are doing damage limitation all the way through this one.
Maybe they've learned their lessons.
Maybe.
Of damage limitation after all the trouble they got in.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not, it's a film that's not really about much, but it is, I think it does pull off being that vessel for all of the story and character development that has been going on for the last 10 years and setting up things for the next, and manages to be, like I said, manages to have some quite emotional moments, manages to be funny, manages to be exciting in action scenes. Like, I never had that problem where I wasn't sure what was going on in the action or what they were trying to achieve and that kind of thing. So, yeah. Overall, it's good.
Very, very good.
Yeah, I liked it.
I heartily recommend it to anyone who somehow hasn't seen it yet, because I feel like, well, they've broken all the box office records, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, I feel like there's some sort of, like, the probability of being confronted with spoilers just keeps exponentially increasing the longer you go without seeing it.
Yes.
So if you want to go in unspoiled, then you either need to see it ASAP or, like, somehow get in your meditation booth away from the internet.
Yes. Well, well done on giving a thorough but spoiler-free review, Matt. That must have been quite challenging.
It was. It was close. In places there. Oh,
boy. I was saying to Matt, I have had to spend quite a long time reading articles on the internet about what might happen next for the Avengers, because I was so emotionally affected by the ending of the film. So there's help out there, guys. You can look up some helpful articles online. Great. Okay. Well, next we are going to be, very exciting, finding out who won the last episode of Strat and Alex Do Art. So if you cast your minds back, they both produced a set design for our upcoming production of The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. Now, Frankie Fightwell, as we're performing, is a live radio play and therefore has no set. So they really let their imaginations run wild. And Strat produced a clever sort of two-state set design.
Like a transforming set.
Yep. To be produced on the revolving stage of the Olivier at the National Theatre.
Yep.
And Alex, if you can go bigger, of course does go bigger. And his design was set at the O2 Arena.
The Millennium Dome building, correct, as it is sometimes known.
Yes. So after a lot of votes, thank you very much for everyone who contributed online, Matt and I have been saved the decision making. And by only one vote.
I mean, we were a hung parliament on it, and the internet very nearly was as
you
well.
You very nearly were. I checked it last night, and it was neck and neck. And then by midnight, it had finished, and there was one vote in it, and the winner is Alex.
Yay, we're going to the Millennium Dome building.
Get your walks out, everybody.
Stuart's going to be in a cage.
So there you go. If we suddenly come into a lot of money, we can do a very large production of the final adventure of Frankie Fightwell at the O2 Arena. Sure, sounds fine.
It's an underused venue for theatre,
yeah,
I find.
Of course. If you haven't had a look at those set designs yet, you can go onto our blog at blackshoreonline.com and take a look. They are quite something to behold. So, this time, they've been set a bit of a different challenge. This is Strat and Alex attempting cake decorating.
Strat and Alex do art!
Yes, art.
Oh, I mean, it looks lovely, mate.
So, I've been in eager anticipation of this challenge.
Really?
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Bake Off.
Okay.
And this is, like, going to be a very tiny mini Bake Off. So you're not making cake, but you are decorating cake.
Okay.
Okay.
So are we Mel and Sue, or are we Paul and Mary?
Or are we...
Sandy and Noel.
Sandy and Noel.
Yeah, or Paul and Prue.
Or some combination of those people.
Oh, good grief, there's too many options now.
Can I think about it and come back to you?
Sure.
Okay, great. So...
I'm going to be the one that throws it in the bin.
Well, I really hope we don't have a bin gate incident. It would be widely reported by the press and be very tiresome.
It was one of the most dramatic bits of television.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, she did take it out of the freezer without telling him.
She did.
I mean, it still makes me get angry, and I wasn't involved, and I was just watching.
Yeah.
I was just like... Oh.
Livid.
You'd be so annoyed, because you couldn't get annoyed at her, because she's
an old lady.
She's an old lady.
Yeah.
That's what she wants, you to think.
She made an abhorrent error.
She did.
That is, quite frankly, just, you can't forgive her for that forever.
No. Poor Ian.
I'm glad we've cleared that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving on. We're going to avoid that situation.
Yeah.
We've got cupcake-sized items for you to decorate. I've provided... icing, mm-hmm. icing bags, mm-hmm. food colouring, sprinkle things.
and to be clear, the art in this case is the cake decorating, not the cake making.
No.
The cakes are pre-made.
Correct. I haven't even made them. Like, they're bought. I haven't got time, frankly.
You're a busy lady.
I'm a busy lady. So, not the people that bake cakes aren't necessarily busy. I just, on this occasion, didn't have time to do it, so I didn't.
It's okay.
None of us were
judging you.
Okay, good. Nice. So, you can basically have completely free reign. There's no specific theme. You can decorate them however you like. Whatever you think is most pleasing to the eye. There's even a selection of piping nozzle shapes that you could use. So, I mean, there's a lot of creative decisions to be made.
Yeah, and when you present them to us, you if you have had a particular occasion in mind while doing your decorating, mm-hmm. you can let us know that as context.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so you don't have to.
No, and you've got two cupcakes each. So you could do two completely different designs mm-hmm. and hedge your bets, or you could do mm-hmm. some kind of joint design, or you could go for uniformity and have them both exactly the same. It's entirely up to you. So there's lots of different ways in which you could be scoring points here.
Yeah, see, this, I feel like, oh, you could fall down so easily.
Well, quite.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's how bin gate happens.
So pressure's on. But it should be enjoyable, I hope.
I think so.
I think so, yeah.
And you've got 15 minutes.
Right.
From everything being laid out and set up, you've got 15 minutes
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's 7.5 minutes per cupcake.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. Any questions?
No.
All right, go. Well, there you go. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fine, right?
I expect so, yeah. They're both competent professionals.
Yeah, I mean, Strat did refer to a piping bag as a pump bag. But otherwise, I'm totally confident. It'll be fine.
We'll catch up with them and find out later.
Yeah. In the meantime, something that I actually am very confident about... I've put together a trailer for the final adventure of Frankie Fightwell. It is showcasing the Foley skills of the team, which I've been incredibly impressed with, And I hope you enjoy. Put it in your ears right now.
Frankie Fightwell and the Nazi Man Spiders. Chapter 4. Slowly, carefully, Frankie picked her way through the oppressive darkness of the stony tunnel, brushing disturbingly large cobwebs from her path. She had no idea how far beneath the streets of London she was, but it felt like she was halfway to hell. Frankie allowed her hand to run along the unnatural walls as she walked. She had left the smooth concrete train tunnels of the underground behind well over an hour ago.
I hope I find somewhere to top up my Oyster card.
Shh! The passages she walked now were coarse and haphazard in places, as though they had been dug by a million frenzied claws. There were certainly no human tool marks in the dark rock that surrounded her. Interesting, murmured Frankie.
Interesting.
Frankie had no way of being certain that her missing friends had been taken this way, but her gut instinct told her she was on their trail. What had they discovered beneath the streets of London that had led to their kidnapping? What was she about to discover? She wondered aloud to herself.
What am I about to discover?
Finally, up ahead, she saw a glimmer of light. Not the welcome light at the end of the tunnel, but a sickly glow that seemed to pulse like a warning beacon. Turn back, it seemed to say. But turn back was a cautionary phrase missing from Frankie Fightwell's heroic dictionary, along with no entry.
No entry.
And please wear seatbelt while vehicle is in motion.
Maybe I can find a better dictionary down here.
More cautious now, Frankie crept towards the end of the tunnel, her heart hammering in her chest. She brushed aside the final sheet of cobwebs and beheld a sight more horrifying than any she had seen before.
Oh, God!
A vast cavern stretched before her, the distant walls unseen and unknowable. Banners of red-spun silk fluttered from the walls in a stale breeze, swastikas haunting their centres like thick, black spider webs. But this wasn't what held Frankie's attention. She could not take her eyes off the row upon row of hideous hybrid man spiders. Each of the 6-foot arachnoids had their arms held out in a crude emulation of the swastikas on the banners. Together, their chittering, scratchy voices rose as one, echoing from the walls and ceilings. Spid Heil, they chanted. Spid Heil!
Hang on. Spid Heil.
What?
Spid Heil! That's just terrible.
I thought it was quite clever, actually.
Stuart is author of the beloved young adult literature heroine, Frankie Fightwell. While writing his latest novel, Stuart realises that there may be more than just the usual vampire sharks and giant Nazi man spiders preventing Frankie from making it to the end of her latest adventure.
I've been thinking. Nothing draws people back to a series like the tragic demise of a long-running character.
What are you saying?
If someone important dies, the old fans will come rushing back to buy it. We'll need to market it right, of course. It'll be like car crash television. People will want to know exactly how it happens, how the character dies, I mean. Sort of like morbid curiosity. Sales will be up. The publisher will change their mind, and you can start again with a brand new contract, a brand new series, and a brand new character. You need to kill off Frankie Fightwell.
Well, this is awkward.
Yes, it is awkward. And now Frankie's got a new foe to fight. How's that gonna go down?
Then you are the only thing that stands between me and world domination. Killing you is worth any amount of trouble. You stand for everything that I hate. You're my greatest enemy and I am your arch nemesis.
He seems nice.
With a chilling certainty, Frankie realized she would have to flee further into the tunnels if she wanted to live to fight another day. This isn't over, Victor, she snarled before making good her escape.
This isn't over, Victor!
Ha 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 ha, laughed Victor. Ha 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 ha!
Ha 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 ha! Ha 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 ha!
The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell will be performed in front of a live audience with live Foley. That's the creation of sound effects. Here's some Foley we made earlier, using tea towels and our mouths. Sounding good, right? And we've got a watermelon for the show, so imagine what noises we can make with that. You can come and see the show on Friday the 11th and Saturday the 12th of May at Putney Arts Theatre at 7:30pm. Tickets are available now at wandsworthfringe.com. We've rated the show 12A, like off of films like Hulk and Iron Man, so it's suitable for younger viewers. We've got a British Sign Language interpreter joining us on Friday the 11th of May. Frankie Fightwell is written by Chris Buxey, produced by Blackshaw Theatre Company, and supported by Wandsworth Arts Fringe through their Wandsworth Grant Fund. We've used some lovely music on this trailer, Vortex by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons. Buy a ticket to see the show. Wandsworthfringe.com.
Well, there you go. You excited, Matt?
Very.
Good.
And I feel like I understand better some of the weird things in your fridge now.
Yeah, I have two incredibly large halves of a watermelon in my fridge currently.
The life of a theatre producer.
I am genuinely concerned. I have a shopping delivery coming on Monday and I don't think it's going to fit in the fridge. Good. Well, you can still get tickets for the show. And, well, if you're listening before the 11th and 12th of May, you can.
If you're listening after the 11th and 12th of May, I hope you saw it. And if you didn't, where were you?
I know, right? You missed an amazing show. It was very good. Sold out both nights. You will be able to listen to it on the podcast, but it will not be the same because you won't be able to see what they're doing with that watermelon. but there now is exclusively a 2-for-1 offer available if you book online. So if you use the code Frankie241... you can get what it says on the tin. That's, 2 tickets for the price of 1.
That's Frankie.
Correct.
241.
Correct. So go to blackshawonline.com and do that. Now, we're going to hear what I'm sure you've been on tenterhooks for, the second part of Strat and Alex doing art.
Some delicious art.
Well, your time is up, and I'm excited to see what decorated beauties you've produced. How are you feeling, Matt?
Hungry for sweet cakes.
It does, the air smells of sugar at the moment, which would be the icing. Strat, let's start with you. Talk us through your cakes, mate.
Well, from all the bake-off chat that we had prior to the thing,
yeah,
I decided I would make melon soup.
Oh my goodness.
So there's only so much I can do with the things that we provided. But I managed to make pink icing just about for the skin, kind of a skin tone. And then I looked up Melon Sue and found that Sue's distinct thing is probably her fringe, her blonde fringe. Yeah. And she also, in a lot of pictures, seems to be wearing Mel. Mel is blonde fringe and also quite elaborate earrings. And Sue is glasses and quiff.
Yeah.
So I have taken those.
Yeah.
And made as best effort I can in creating them in piping and icing form.
And so which bits did you pipe?
I piped the hair and the glasses and the... So the piping was the hair.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't make, like, black for the... or brown, so... But I had
this writing icing,
that's the one, for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the earrings is... green food colouring put directly on to give the shimmery shine.
Oh, right.
And a couple of pink ice, little hundreds and thousands of stars.
Yeah.
Just, and then, yeah, dots and smiles. Dots and lines for the eyes and smiles.
Yeah.
But I wanted to focus on what I believe to be the kind of caricature traits, as it were.
Yeah.
Which, for the very short amount of time I had for research, was fringe and glasses.
Lovely. Alex.
I'm a little bit stunned into silence by Strat's efforts. I like it. I went with a theme. I went with St. Patrick's Day cakes.
Oh, right,
I thought We've got
a retrospective.
Another retrospective of the St. Patrick's Day. So because we had green, it was mainly because we had green.
Sure. I mean, there were other colours also, but carry on.
But that one seemed to work the quickest and give the most verdant colour. Mm-hmm. So did that, but I first put normal cream cheese icing on first to give it a base, and then blended it in to give it a sort of marbly, swirly effect, slightly magical, and then put three little green dots to make the shamrock in the middle.
Four.
And then four even, can't count, good work, strong. Four little green chocolatey balls in the middle to create a shamrock, and then sprayed it with some gold shimmer spray to just give it a little more magical feel.
Mm. Yeah.
It is very shimmery.
It's got a little bit of a like magical portal to the end of the rainbow sort of.
Yeah, thing. That's kind of what I was going for. Like the sort of, magical leprechaun, typical Irish St. Patrick's Day tropes.
Matt, what do you think?
So, Alex, I don't think it's our strongest week. What do you mean?
So they
don't look blown away.
I know.
The first observation I would like to make about like my feelings when I looked at all of the cakes is I don't particularly want to eat any of them.
Yeah.
They don't.
Is it because you can't bear to stomach melon soup? Is that?
I don't want to eat them or look at them. Carry on, Matt.
So, like I say, the St. Patrick's Day cupcakes have that magical, portally, swirly feel, but the green is not the most appetizing.
Okay.
And I mean, like the consistency is good between those ones.
What do you mean?
As in,
and between the two of them,
yeah, you can see that they're part of a set.
Yeah.
The in both cases, I think the smoothness of the spreading of the icing, is not the most neat or even.
No,
that was so difficult.
It's so a little informal.
So difficult. I think maybe it's because we're using muffins with the tops chopped off.
I think it's in both cases for other reasons.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which actually not wholly down to technique, but neither of you used enough icing to to get a uniform shape on the icing.
More icing.
What tools were you using, Alex, to apply your icing?
A knife.
Right, that shows. Yeah.
What should we have used?
Well, if you had more icing and used the back of a spoon, you'd have had a much nicer kind of swirl to a peak.
That's annoying. I started with a spoon and thought, no, a knife will be better.
Ooh. Is that because you used the bowl of the spoon?
No, I was using the back of the spoon, but having seen programmes like Cake Boss, Master of Cakes, they butter icing.
Yeah.
Is that
on a flat cake?
Yeah, when they cover it in royal icing afterwards.
This is
different. So I should have continued because I was trying to combine two things that don't actually.
So match. I mean, on the technical front, there are some bare patches showing through, Alex, on yours where you haven't got the coverage necessary, and it doesn't quite cover the edges either, where it meets the wrapper.
There's a little bit of that going on Sue.
Mel's looking pretty patchy, and actually Sue from the edge I can see here is also quite thin on that side. I do think that there's a steadiness of hand in some of the piping that Strat's done. And I think the concept is okay for Alex's. I think overall, this has not been your strongest episode.
And okay, I'll take that.
Did you enjoy doing it, and how much of your enjoyment was like proportionate to the amount of icing that you ate on the way?
I didn't eat any icing.
No, what? I did not eat any icing.
Maybe that's the problem.
I did try and eat a bit of it with the food colouring in, which now I can see has a use by date of July 2014.
Yeah.
So that may be why it tasted a bit funky.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. No, not for eating.
So no.
Let's maybe chuck that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just went through my cupboard and was like, well, this will do for doing an art thing. Not, I'm going to make everyone eat a cake that I'm going to use these ingredients for.
I mean, I thoroughly enjoy myself, and I feel that both my my attempt and my, you know, my theme and concept were actually pretty good. So I'm upset that the judges have, in this instance, felt the need to throw me under a bus.
We haven't thrown you under a bus. That implies that there's been some massive error made that we're blaming you for.
Well,
then you got yourself to blame. I've had a great time. I don't really, I've made some friends. I'm gonna see everyone.
Have you gone on a journey? After this.
I've gone on such a journey.
I came with nothing.
Yeah, I'm leaving with nothing. I just rung my mum and had a cry.
You left with your friends Mel and Sue.
Yes. Who you're going to maybe eat it's later, like, from the bottom up.
It's like Wilson from
Castaway.
From
Except Castaway. His Wilson was more recognisable as a face.
No,
I think yours is recognisable as a face.
Drawn by a 6-year-old, yes. If these had been presented to me by children, I'd have thought they'd made a fair effort.
Mate.
What I'd really like to do as a next step is get Vicky Weston's mum in, who has done like professional level cake decoration.
Oh, no!
To teach you guys a few techniques.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I can barely get the icing in the icing bag, so I think I think we've got some stuff we can learn, Alex.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that you. I mean, obviously you don't enjoy this bit where we're destroying you, but you enjoyed the process.
I really enjoyed making
them. Which is great, because it is such a good activity to do, and a really good way, like, to spend a bit of time doing something mindful that you know, no life distractions.
Yeah.
It's a good activity. He's just doing icing out of the pot now. Yeah.
I think that I would too, given this roasting.
Like demolition derby.
So, in terms of choosing terrible. A winner here,
well, someone's got to win.
Yeah,
do they?
I think given the current form of criticism,
this one was a race to the bottom. Let's be honest. Yeah. So,
I would.
Who got to the bottom first?
Ooh. Well, you're working on that tub.
Yeah, it'll be me in a diabetic coma in about 5 minutes.
I'm gonna. Go for Strat.
You're very kind.
Because the icing on Strats at least looks like chocolate, which I might want to eat.
Okay, so you're going on like eatability.
Yeah. And you said that his piping technique was good.
I said it looked like he had a steady hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite pleased with the quiff. That worked out quite
well. Yeah, no, that's the bit I was looking at in particular.
That was the last bit I did. I kind of hit my stride.
I think I'll go on concept. I'm going to mark on concept, and I prefer Strat's concept, I'm afraid. Okay. I think it's a bit more fun and up my street.
Okay.
St. Paddy's Day is not really a thing for me.
Okay.
But I think, you know, it was a good effort, and you themed it well, so.
Well, you know.
You win some, you lose some.
Do you know what I mean? Next time I'll be back with, like,
the Renegade skills. Master.
D4 damage, power to the people.
So we'll take photos, and they'll be on social media, so you can see whether you agree with my scathing comments or whether you think actually I've done them a disservice. And you can don't at me, but you can send in your comments.
Don't at me, bro.
Yeah. So well done. Good stage one.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good job. Cheers. Good job. Excellent.
Room for improvement.
The Blackshaw Art Hour.
Ooh, that's a tasty treat.
Well, that was a car crash.
It was a little bit of a disappointment.
Little bit? When I was uploading this to the blog, I looked at the pictures again, and I just felt so sad.
Oh, sad is somehow even worse than, like disgusted.
But they are really sad. You guys have to look at the pictures. It's like a crime against cake. It's really awful.
If anybody is like a London-based cake decorator that would like to train our boys.
A hobbyist or a professional, we would welcome.
Show them where they went wrong.
Please.
Critique those cakes.
Oh, boy.
We would love to work with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, partly just so that you can point out that I was right in my harsh words, okay? And I feel like they need some character development on the cake side of things. Sorry, guys, but this was not your strongest time.
They can't all be winners.
No.
Not everybody can be good at every art.
That's true.
There just aren't enough hours in a life to get good at all the arts.
Can't win them all.
No.
I mean, on this occasion, Stratton did win, but I mean, it's a hollow victory. Okay, we'll stop now. But, wow. Let's talk about something less upsetting. Merely role players.
Yay! Yes, we've had the downer that is Marvel Avengers Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers.
Yeah.
The downer that is Strat and Alex do cake decorating.
Yeah.
But the upcoming, soon to begin next season of Merely Role Players, which is the sister podcast of the Blackshore Arts Hour, where us theatre people play some role playing games live on air for your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be a bonkers heist.
Yes.
In the style of The Sting or Ocean's 11 or Dave's favourite heist movie, The Sixth Sense.
Gives you guys a taste of Dave's technique.
So we recorded it all a couple of weekends ago, as we're talking now. I'm in the process of editing, but the season is going to kick off later in May. Keep an eye on at Merely Roleplay on Twitter for the release date.
And subscribe if you haven't already on your podcast providing service.
Yeah. The story is going to be called Let's Get Gideon.
Yeah.
Gideon being our mark for this heist story.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh my goodness, it was so much fun. I was really nervous in advance because I thought, having watched every episode that existed of the BBC TV series Hustle, that whilst I had the know-how for a heist, that that I would instantly forget everything I know, and that we wouldn't be able to come up with a good plan. But wow, I mean, we were quite the meeting of minds, the four of us.
We went some places.
Oh, some places. Yeah, it was lovely. It was really, really funny. And Chris and Josh, who are both new to Merely Role Players, were absolutely brilliant. Such good interactions. Some very intense interactions between Josh and Matt in character. So you can look forward to those.
Yeah. And if you are coming to see The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell, which Chris Buxey wrote, that is a great insight into the inner workings of his narrative mind, the sort of things that he likes to make up. So that is a good preview of the sort of thing he's going to be bringing to this heist.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of pseudoscience.
Yeah, it ended up as a weird delve into the stranger preoccupations of the ultra rich.
Yeah.
But it was that's the highfalutin highbrow pitch for this season.
Yeah, sure. It was good to have Chris there, if not for everything else, for that reason alone, because he is an actual science man. That's what they're called. So as a science man, he was able to really produce some very convincing stuff.
Science man is my favourite Chris in the Marvel Universe.
So there you go. What higher recommendation can there be? Get yourselves listening to Merely Role Players, the podcast, as soon as your ears will allow.
So just search for Merely Role Players wherever you normally get podcasts. Wherever you got this one, search for it there.
Yeah. Fabulous. Well, that brings us to the end of this very lovely chat, Matt Boothman. And we will be returning next time with other things. Do you have any inkling as to what you might be reviewing for us?
Nah. Tell me on the tweeters what I should be doing.
You're
merely MJ.
Of course you are. Merely MJ. So there you go, guys. Get in touch. You can also tweet at Blackshot Update if you want to, you know, just with general stuff or specific suggestions. And as we say, if you are in any way into cake decorating, please get in touch.
Please help.
Bye.
Go on.
Treat yourself to something.
Subscribe to the Blackshot Arts Hour on your generic podcast resource.
You deserve it.